Welcome to the Depth Gamer Podcast. This is the boys at CGU, but without Devin Palermo. He has seen Zappa play Zappa tonight. In his place, we have a man who we could call by either his gamer tag or his name, but you can introduce yourself however you see fit.
My name is Steel.
Call him Smooth Hands. That's the old nickname. Old Smooth Hands. Oh, what do you want to go by so we can know what to call you?
Just call me Steve.
Steve. Just call him Steve.
Just Steve.
Just Steve.
Or Steve-O if you prefer. If you're feeling like that.
Feel like saying O at the end of a name. That's the thing to go with. That's
what we should all go with O at the end of our name. Margo. Big Pontius O.
Dano. No, because then people are going to go, book him, Dano. For all the people over 60 who listen to this podcast, oh,
one that's of our them, mean
dad.
Demographic.
No, my dad's not even 60. That doesn't make sense. But it doesn't matter. Dad's actually not 60, which is amazing. But today, there was some stuff I was trying to do with gaming, and I didn't have time. But I played a lot of games leading up to today. We're also going to talk about a general topic when we get to that. We'll do our quick hits, which will catch Steve off guard, and that's just fine. First off, we're just going to do a couple of things I thought was interesting. One of them is the new Madden 25, which will come out for the Xbox One, is going to have Coach Glass, which is going to actually use smart glass, which will be on your phone, and you're going to be able to basically use it for different things involving the offense. And it's going to be weird. Like, one person's going to be able to be like a coordinator, or offensive or defensive coordinator, to basically allow the person who has a controller to play the game with the person that doesn't.
Okay.
Let's say you're not very good at Madden, but you want to play with your friend, you can call the plays like a coach on your phone.
That's something that I've always tried to...
Yeah, we've always kind of did it for fun.
Yeah, with sports games. And football, I think it's easiest in baseball because there's stoppages in play.
Exactly, and it's realistic because that's kind of what happens in football. Rarely do quarterbacks call their own plays anyway, so... I think it's a really cool addition, and I'd say that's the first thing EA has done in years that I thought was actually interesting.
Probably because they were listening to the podcast when we've suggested using tablets and smart glass in the past.
Yeah, it's not difficult. Games. I imagine it's not difficult to do, so it's pretty gotta be pretty fun. I mean, it's fun if you're like a football nerd. It might be a cool way to get like you know some people who have girlfriends who maybe watch fantasy football, but aren't necessarily versed in the idea of how to cheaply play Madden to win, which is unfortunately the way most people play Madden is the cheap crap they know works. So your girlfriend doesn't want to learn 20 years of Madden history to know that the screen pass always works or that the deep streak doesn't work on the cover too. Instead of her learning as such, you can just call plays and you can have fun together. But that was interesting. Final Fantasy VI is coming to iOS and Android.
What?
Yeah, can you believe that?
I do.
Seven is going to be coming out around the corner. If they did five already, they've done six. They did four, five, and six. So you know seven's around the corner. Steve, how do you feel about that?
It's going to take so long. They should have been doing that like
7 years ago.
I've been waiting for them to come out with any kind. I mean, they can come out with Final Fantasy 12-2 and 10-2 and 13-2 and 13. It's so stupid. And then what do they do with Final Fantasy 7? They come out with some like shooter game with Vincent, like one of the supporting cast. It's fucking dumb.
I never understood why Square Enix has done. They seem to ask the people what they want and go, okay, great, now we know we're not going to do it.
Maybe they think that the game is so perfect the way it is because so many people enjoyed it that they don't want to screw with it too much, but now I think they could remake it like...
Yeah, I mean, the question is, would the game hold up in the modern times? It's one worth it. I think we're going to find the answer out to.
I think it will.
Are these HD, like, HD remake versions?
Yeah.
Okay. So this one needs to... Okay.
Yeah, they said the Final Fantasy IV, The After Years, is a 3D remake of the 2009 sequel to Final Fantasy IV. So they're even doing remakes of sequels of original games.
Right.
Like those weird titular spinoffs, like the, you know, Advent Children type games, if you know what I'm saying, and your X2s and things like that. You know?
I wonder
Ergice.
Yeah, how many Final Fantasy games have there been made then? If you consider all those X2s and.
Right, and just wouldn't be like. Just the remakes of the original ones, like in like the Nintendo ones, and they're putting on new systems and other systems and shit.
Yeah, because iOS is starting to have, and Android systems are having a ton of these remakes of the old school 8-bit Final Fantasy games.
7 was like everyone's favorite, right?
I think it's universally considered the best Final Fantasy.
So do you think they'll hold off just because they know people will buy the other Final Fantasy remakes?
Yeah, but there's got to be people like me who've been foaming at the fucking mouth for the last 2 decades.
But right. Also, they did release a remake version for the PlayStation 3.
Okay.
And, gosh, I don't think that sold all that well. So I really don't know if they're necessarily in a rush.
People probably looked at it and said, oh, it's the same thing.
Yeah, and they probably already own it. And the thing is that at the time, half the PlayStation 3s out there, almost all of them did, they all played PlayStation 2 games.
Right.
And so it's kind of like you could play PlayStation 2, 3, and then a third of them played PlayStation 1 games. Yeah, so you could have...
PlayStation 7 was a PS1 game.
Yeah, and so you 33% of the PlayStation owners...
I forget that sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy how long that was? But 33% of the PlayStation owners at the time were probably had access to a working PS1 because their PlayStation 3 was a PlayStation 1. So, you know, you never really know what's going to happen with that. I got one more thing I want to talk about, is what I pretty much thought at the time. But it's interesting. I kind of wanted to veer off on that. But without going too far, Square Enix is going to do crowdfunding, which I think is kind of interesting. And I always, you know, crowdfunding where a bunch of people contribute to make something happen. So it's like crowdsourcing or crowdfunding. And it seems weird to me because I kind of felt when we were championing it like a year ago on this podcast, there was going to be a negative side to it. And one of the ones I was afraid of was that a lot of these companies would start using it who could totally afford to make the game on their own. Like Square Enix does not need my money to make a game.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying.
But they could be doing it to kind of vet interest, and I kind of feel like it sets up a cool possibility. And I want to talk about just a little bit before we move on to the quick hits portion. Is like what exactly is wrong with that? In a way, at first on the surface, to me, it seems like they're just being cheap, right? Oh, but here's the other side of the coin. They're going to tell you, hey, man, we're going to make this game, but only if you get like a million people who say they want to buy it,
right? And because
it kind of protects them from blowing their money on the game that nobody buys.
Guarantees them a certain amount of success.
And if you think about it, it's just a really early pre-order.
It's really what it is.
You get something in return. It's not like you're just contributing to the game being made and then you also have to buy the game.
But one could say that could put a company like GameStop out of business almost like immediately if you think about the reality of distributing. I think it's great, though. And even kind of put Steam away off a little bit in the corner. It's saying, hey, man, we'll ship you the game personally.
Yeah.
That's kind of a big deal.
Eliminating the retailer.
Yeah, and maybe you end up not paying $60 necessarily. Let's say that.
Right.
Because you're not paying three, four people on the way to the company.
Right.
You're straight up giving the company the money to make the game.
Yeah.
I mean, it sets a nice path, as long as it doesn't get abused, for us getting bigger, cooler, awesomer games without paying more than $60 for those games.
It really makes the like limited edition versions of things actually limited edition, since you're setting tiers for the different sort of funding that you're getting and what you get in return. You're
not just making X amount and just stamping them.
Exactly,
which is kind of, we all know that's kind of garbage. Once you hit like age 21, you stop caring about that kind of stuff, right?
I don't care if my controller is like...
Is the Gears of War logo?
Right. Yeah.
But I do love like my Gears of War.
Military gun grips on the fucking handles.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been laughable stuff to me. I mean, I made fun. But some people take that really seriously, I don't want to disrespect them.
I have a pretty stellar Xbox 360 faceplate collection.
Well, that's cool.
That stuff is interesting, though, because I know at first those were really successful.
The faceplates?
Yeah, and that kind of fell off.
That was like a huge thing that they tried to sell.
I would have got one because I couldn't afford it at the time.
I kind of felt like games should have given to you for free for pre-order bonuses, but it probably sealed the deal on some of those pre-orders.
They should have just given you the plastic overlay that goes over the screens and you can just take it off and put it on and interchange them. You know?
Yeah. I mean, they totally dropped that when the Slim came out.
Yeah.
No one noticed it was gone. Right. Nobody even said, I think GameStop didn't go, what are we going to do with all these faceplates? Nobody stopped the teeth.
I like that and dropped it when the sun came on.
I think the problem with that was that, like, you changed the face of it, but the rest of your Xbox was still just bright white.
Yeah.
You know, so it never really
matched. That's why it was weird. And some people actually got stickers to put on. They did design those.
Like skins.
Yeah.
Did they not do that with the
Slims?
The new 360, the Slims? The
faceplates? And even the new ones, which I think.
That's what they called. They probably would have been the most successful on those because they're all fucking black.
It's true. And that's the thing is that you had different options for it. You had a core and a premium and all that nonsense to confuse people.
Right.
And we were paying a lot back then for 360, so it was hard to sell me on like a $10 nameplate.
Right.
I also feel like I said, that's kind of stuff you could throw in. Like, it's one of those weird little bonuses things. I feel like I'm gaining something more than I am. But that's just me.
On the crowdfunding thing, did you see that the Mega Man designer is creating a spiritual successor to Mega Man?
No.
Called Mighty Number 9.
Oh,
and it reached its, like, crowdfunding amount. And it's now... it was going to just be for PC, but now it's going to also come out on the Xbox Live Arcade and the PlayStation Network.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And, like, you could, the screens show, like, it's Mega Man, you know? You can see, like, the guy looks like
Mega Man.
Yeah, he's just like.
But, yes, that's a real good thing on the audio podcast. Hey, guys, you see this picture Dan's holding up?
Hey, you're sitting there like Dr. Evil.
We have secrets. We have visual secrets. You don't know what's going on. I have a dog in my lap.
It does, actually. It's...
and you're stroking it like an evil genius.
Well, I am that.
But no, I think that's pretty cool.
I want to tell you what's going on at the table.
Because that's somebody who's like, on the other side of like the Square Enix thing, where this is a guy who's like, I'll make Mega Man for you if you pay me. And people paid him, and now
I mean, it makes sense. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's,
yeah.
All right. Well, Steve, we're about to move on to a portion called Quick Hits. And let me give you a little bit of a rundown as to how Quick Hits works. You have 1 minute to speak unabated, uncontested, unmolested about anything you want involving gaming. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be a game in particular, something you like, something you dislike. You got 1 minute where we can't interrupt you. When the timer goes up, then we're allowed to chime in. Everybody gets 1 minute, and you're going to go last because you'll see how it's paced.
Yes, I will.
Yeah, you give me some time to think about it. Actually, it'll give you about 3.5 minutes, probably. Dan, your minute starts now.
I've just been playing more of Splinter Cell. I just recently moved, so my headset has been... It's in a box somewhere, so I've really just been playing the single player. And, I mean, I just keep talking about how this is like a return to the stealth-based game and how much I'm liking that. Story's pretty interesting, I think, so far. I'm waiting... I know you end up in Guantanamo Bay... And you have to sneak out of Guantanamo, so I'm kind of looking forward to getting to that. I'm about halfway through it, but it's been pretty good. I like the fact that I never have to shoot a gun if I don't want to is pretty good. Like it, I haven't at all actually. Has it gotten to a point where I had to shoot my way out just to end a level? Like so, I'm just grinding through and slowly, you know, like trial and error over and over again because I don't want to ever kill anyone. I don't know. I just shock them with sticky shockers and continue moving forward. But there's some cool stuff that they did with it, and I'm liking it.
That's your time. I have to point out that it's nice to know that he's gone to Guantanamo Bay. Does that mean in the sequel he goes to White Castle, or did that happen in the last game? All right, so that being said, Splinter Cell for me is a strange franchise because... I've beaten all of them but Double Agent.
Okay.
Double Agent was one I was the most excited for. I also found it to be the most unforgivingly difficult one.
Yeah.
I thought I wanted things in Splinter Cell, and I did not want them. I got them in a game called Double Agent, and realized that immediately, something I now champion openly, that gamers think they know what they want in a game, and then when they get it, they realize that they don't want it.
What did you want, specifically, if you can
think I wanted some stuff to happen in daylight.
Okay.
It was getting kind of old, always being in the dark, and I kind of wanted him to have more morality choices, not just be an automaton. Like,
yeah.
You know, the guy who now sells insurance on the television is like, Sam Fisher, go down and shoot this guy and then do this other thing. And you're like, I don't want to. And he's like, do it. All right, fine. And then you do it.
Yeah.
That was every level, practically. It just got to the point where I really wanted Sam to start... being a little more vocal, and they toyed with it in Chaos Theory.
Yeah.
So I was really excited for where Double Agent was going. And Double Agent went so far that I lost track of what my own morality in the game was. I didn't even know what I wanted.
The one thing I don't like that they... It's almost like they play with that... not the morality stuff, but a little bit like where before every mission, you're like given all... you're given this information from your team, and they're like, what do you want to do? And your choice is launch the mission or hold off. But, like, holding off just means you wander around until you go launch the mission. So I always think it's funny that they're always like, what do you want to do? And you have no actual choice other than, like, well, we're going to launch the mission.
That seems stupid.
So.
Just to get that out of the way, that seems very stupid. I'm ready for my minute. You guys are okay with that?
I am.
And my minute starts now. Me, it's been a lot of two or three games. Madden 25, NBA 2K14, and Bioshock Infinite. I could run it down to you like this. If you like shooters that are smart and have a conscience and are and evolve slowly but end quickly, that's Bioshock Infinite for you. If you like games that grind out and take you weeks to beat, you'll be very disappointed in Bioshock. It's not going to be that. If you don't mind beating a game in a weekend, but you want it to be intense and fun in that 1 or 2 days that you play it, Bioshock Infinite is your game. If you want to grind out a game forever to really learn the ins and outs of it, NBA 2K is your game because it's impossibly hard. It is the hardest NBA 2K, and that says a lot because that game's always been hard. Now it's getting FIFA hard. Madden is fun, The Connected Careers online works better than the offline, and there's no downside. You can start an online one and just not have people join it. Mm. Same game. No downside to it. It's very kooky, but all the freezing issues that happen in the game, the only way to solve them is to not play the offline mode.
That's what I was going to ask.
You play the online mode, the freezing issues are gone. Isn't that ridiculous? Yeah. Yes, but you can start a private one, invite nobody, and launch it, and just play the game.
Yeah, actually the other game I've been playing, I mentioned real quickly to you, I was playing Skyrim. But every time I'm playing Skyrim, like 40 minutes in, my game locks up. So it's really, really frustrating.
That really happens. Yeah, you said because you have too much.
I think I need to clear the cache or something.
Yeah, there's a way you can do that. You can use it. It's usually like on the internet.
Y or something.
No, it's a little more. It made it a little more complicated than that. But actually, I think you now can just do it through the menus.
Okay.
So you should be able to do that. I think you can clear games cache now.
So is this the most recent NBA then?
Yeah, the one that just came out like October 1st.
You weren't going to buy. So what made you buy it?
Sometimes, Dan.
14.
Sometimes in life, Dan, you have moments of weakness. And I was mad.
I like the NBA games.
They're so hard, man. So, new one's got the LeBron Path to Greatness. Haven't played it yet. Played the My Career mode. The changes they made to the My Career are small but good.
Yeah.
But the changes they needed to make, they did not make.
So,
But they didn't take away the things that were good about it. So that's still there. But they've made the game so incredibly difficult now. The learning curve is obnoxious.
Yeah.
And if you thought you knew last year's game, well, guess what? All the buttons are different. Of them except for pass, which is A. Outside of that, everything else is different.
Can you remap them to 2K13? You know,
I purposely didn't do that because I haven't even checked because I wanted to see if I could master these new buttons, give them a chance. I feel that the design of these new buttons is not to make the game easier or the controls more fluid. It is to intentionally make them harder.
Before we move on to Steve-O, do you feel that it was worth Derrick Rose sitting out last season then?
No.
In your estimation, in 2K?
No. Last year was the Bulls year to win the championship.
Okay. Look at the scorn on his face.
Man. And for the record, one thing that is shocking to me about NBA 2K14, besides the fact that they made it very difficult for what seems like no reason, I will say one thing that's very interesting is they seem to be embracing this daily ratings change thing. So during the regular season, every day they're going to change the ratings and the rosters. I just don't know how I feel about that.
That could work if that's done right.
Yeah, but it's so risky.
Yeah, and
it depends on how much they change the ratings.
Exactly.
And how does that work in like a career mode?
It doesn't affect it at all.
Okay. Oh, well, that's kind of
stupid. It only really affects you if you start a franchise mode that day. And play
every game that's...
Yeah, basically finish it in one night, and then redo it again the next day. Or if you play online a lot. It seems like they're trying to really cater to the online crowd. Yeah. And that's what I want, because I'm kind of one of those guys, but I do play like that game 50% of the time I'm by myself, and I play it, at least. I played some of the team-up games and stuff. They were fun. There's a typical bullcrap there where there's no real reason not to quit, so everybody quits.
Right.
We won a game, but barely, because some guy who was having a great game shooting slightly better than me decided to not pass me the ball in the fourth quarter at all. Sure, I was shooting 38%. He was shooting 48%. But I also had 10 rebounds and 6 assists to go with my 19 points, where he had 1 assist and 1 rebound.
Well, maybe you should have been under the basket catching all his misses.
Well, that's how I got the 9 rebounds, actually. So, Steve, if you can abstain if you wish, but if you have a minute, let me know now.
Sure.
And your minute starts now.
All right, I'm going to go back to something we were talking about earlier, because I don't think there was quite enough time for Final Fantasy games. And this is more of just almost like a rip, I guess, on why in God's name are you making sequels to games that are already sequels themselves? Just call it something else. I mean, it doesn't have to be 10-2 or 13-2. And I don't know what they do. They focus on a different character, and usually it's just some sleazy dressed broad. And they're putting all the I mean, this could be a broader subject of how misallocation of resources in video games. Like Lego games. What the fuck is that? I mean, seriously, dude. I mean, the Star Wars games, they make Lego and Indiana Jones and all that crap. They can make more sequels for just regular Star Wars for people who actually like that shit instead of having to waste their money. Just because they like Star Wars, to go buy the Lego Star Wars game. I think that's stupid. And the Final Fantasy thing, I think, is kind of like that, too. And they could have, by now, done 7. They could have made 20 Final Fantasy by now, and they probably could have fixed 14. Instead of just letting it die, which I think is what's happened with it.
Yeah, it's a shame, because I think about what they've done with the Star Wars IP, and we've kind of talked about this before.
I don't even know what's going on with that one.
The two most disappointing things to me in the gaming world, number one is the fact that Marvel can't seem to make games in the last 5 years that are good. And they've decided to do Superhero Squad, and they decided to make Lego games.
Mm-hmm. So it's geared towards kids, and the kids don't complain about shit, because they're like, this is so cool.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what they figured out. They figured out that kids' expectations are low, but their buying power is likely to happen, because so many parents aren't together now that if mom refuses to buy it, you could probably suck her dad into it, or vice versa.
Yeah, and somebody's going to do it, because the kid's going to shit his pants, and what the fuck are you going to do then?
Yeah, the kid's going to go, yeah, nobody loves me if you don't buy me Marvel Superhero Squad, even though the game's stupid and I won't play in a week. Same with Lego Batman. Like, you could be, okay, now here's the thing that's interesting to me. It's not DC. DC's not having this problem, because DC's making good Batman games.
Right.
Lego Batman's the only Lego game that's not terrible. It still sucks, but it's not terrible. But Batman Arkham Asylum, well, no. Batman Arkham City was a fantastic game.
I enjoyed the first one. I didn't even play the second one, I don't think. But I didn't really do much in them. I just had, bits and pieces
of time. Yeah, and the combat stuff that you liked?
Yeah.
That's even better in the new one. And they give you more levels. And it can be Nightwing, you can be Robin, you can be Catwoman.
Can you get it?
And they all have different abilities, and it's fantastic.
Do you own it?
I did. I sold it recently. You should have, it's stupid. I shouldn't have.
You should have a Lego Batman DLC skin. So you can play so Arkham City as Lego Batman.
That'd be so terrible. Batman was not a mistake. Marvel Ultimate Alliance, as you know, I championed.
We were just talking about it last week.
And we played it recently.
Yeah, we played it recently.
Marvel Ultimate Alliance. Yeah. That was the thing that the reason there are no more is because when, basically Disney, theory is Disney bought it and said, listen, let's just gear this towards kids, make a bunch of movies, money, 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 cash money, make money. And I get their whole idea. But at a certain point, like, you have to have integrity for your product, or eventually people stop buying it. You cannot do it forever. I mean, it's happened. We saw it happen with Tony Hawk. Yep. It happened with Rock Band. People won't buy crap forever.
Right.
They won't.
That's another thing. I downloaded the demo.
I was hoping that wouldn't get mentioned. I'm sorry.
For Tony Hawk Pro Skater, the remake.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, this is cool. I thought I wanted to buy it before they remade it. I was like, they should remake Tony Hawk. And then I played it and I was like, I could probably enjoy this again, but I don't need to. What I really didn't like, though, is I think they changed the soundtrack.
Well, they probably couldn't get the rights to a lot of those songs. I think about the very first Tony Hawk.
Yeah, the very first Tony Hawk.
Yeah. If Primus is still in it, I'm cool. If they took Primus out, I'm done with him.
But
I feel like there's this weird thing in games, or the sequels and the safe plays. They make a lot of safe plays. Square Enix does it, but they make some really puzzling decisions. And I can't pretend to really get in the psyche of a Japanese company, because I really think the Japanese culture is so different than ours. They have such a different opinion on how sequels should work and how narrative should be told. It's so different. Like, we think that IPs are tied to main characters. They have made it very obvious in Final Fantasy that they don't care if you liked Cloud. They don't care how much you like Lightning or whatever. Yeah. Next person they're going to name after. Would next person be Cumulus? I don't know. But when it comes down to it, like, you're going to name people and you're going to make everybody love that character. And then you go, yeah, okay, have fun. You'll only see him maybe once and then probably never again.
Maybe in a fighting game.
Yeah, maybe.
Or Kingdom Hearts.
Maybe they'll sneak him into Kingdom Hearts or Smash Brothers or something. But that's about it. It's just a strange decision, but it's how they roll. It's what they do. And then we complain. We have the opposite thing, where we have the people who, Disney apparently now, who run Marvel, don't seem to care at all about what the people want, as far as integrity is concerned, and they will give you the same garbage over and over and over again.
Well, that's where I guess it could be kind of cool with the Kickstarter thing, going back to that, where you could be funding some of those, like, they could be gauging interest and then funding those, like we said. The flip side of that, I think, is how much more will, like, the I helped you make this game and I'm disappointed be ratcheted up. Like, just gamer complaints in general. If you're like, I paid for you to make this. I didn't just buy it.
Yeah, that's,
and this
that's
game
a big
is
one.
Not the game that I wanted. That will be very, very, it'll be like, could you imagine Peter Molyneux getting a hold of Kickstarter and the ludicrous promises he would be able to make then? Be even worse.
Yeah, it'd be ridiculous. Did you see that comment I tweeted by Ken Levine, by the way?
Yeah, I did.
About the quote he said about the 1999 mode in Bioshock Infinite, that casual gamers or non-hardcore gamers get to a part in the game where it's challenging and they give up, and hardcore gamers will say, I'm going to basically...
It was... I'm going to show this game who's boss.
Yeah, that's what it was. I thought that was kind of important. I think the Japanese think that most of the communities like that.
Except that...
I think they're wrong. We can't really talk about Old Republic today.
I think games...
But that's another one of those things.
Well, games don't know what to...
Well, lack of information. I don't know a lot about what's going on with Old Republic. Okay, I've heard...
Like MMO?
Yeah, I've heard... That's just one of those things that Disney... you know, they bought Star Wars, and I think they could go back to the drawing board a third time and make an MMO, or they should instead just make Knights of the Old Republic a good single-player game again. I'm just going to get that one out there.
Make a couple movies.
They could make some movies that aren't terrible, and then decide to give everybody what they want, and that's make a third Knights of the Old Republic. Modernize it just a tad. It doesn't have to be Oblivion or Skyrim-ish. It doesn't have to do that. Right. Modernize it a tad, though. Make it a little more freedom on the part of the player. Give us some morality choices earlier in the game.
When does that actually matter?
Yeah, when does that actually affect the rest of the game, not just like the cutscene at the end or something? Right. And give us a reason to be a Sith.
Yeah.
Other than just wanting to use lightning and choke. Like, my whole thing is this. The only reason I ever want to be a Sith in a Star Wars game is because lightning and choke are the best force powers.
And you can make them look cool, too.
It'd be like, you know, pasty guys with scars over their face. Yeah. Which, of course, you do.
Well, going into our next topic, I think this works really well, where, like, rather than giving me episodes, 7, 8, and 9?
Mm-hmm.
Give me, as far as movies, give me Knights of the Old Republic era movies.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
A good Clone Wars movie. Like, when it actually tells the tale of the Clone Wars properly, it doesn't just use it as a backdrop for a movie. I never understood the point of that.
I mean, the CGI cartoon on Cartoon Network of the Old Republic, the Clone Wars, they're pretty badass. I mean, a lot of it, you know, some of it kills time with plot and, like, the Amidala shit and, like, shit most people don't really care about, but...
People really like that show, I know. I never watched it.
Are you talking about the very newest one or the...
Yeah, like the... Not the cartoon, but the CGI. No,
the CGI.
Yeah, like the...
Dude, I mean, they bought Darth Maul back in one of the... In a few, like... They had a storyline
about the whole family.
He had a brother named... Savage Opress, you know, spelled Savage Opress.
Yeah, okay.
And he's like big as hell, and he even meets back up with Palpatine, and I don't know, I forget what happened.
So I feel like there's a lot of gray area in the prequels because you know, Lucas could have printed the script out on Swiss cheese for the first three movies. He really could have.
Mm-hmm.
And by the first three, I mean the Phantom Menace through Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
So you have this basic idea of how to make a bad movie and what not to do. And based on that template alone, you have a successful formula for at least one movie that kind of ties the prequels up and puts them to bed. Because there's some big-time gaps and flaws in that we're not going to talk about right now. It's not that kind of podcast. But video games can do the same thing. And that's kind of my thing. Is you can make a great MMO of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
That would have been so much better.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
It does. Mass Effect.
Yeah, they could do wonders with Mass Effect.
Well, remember, Mass Effect was pretty much Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be, pretty much with the formula
that was set up. The cross between Star Wars, Star Trek, and Halo.
And all of your abilities, in Mass Effect are basically
Force powers.
Yeah, and then they gave you a blade at the end, which is kind of like a lightsaber, a knife in Halo.
And
they
have the Renegade / Paragon, which is basically light side, dark side. There's no gray area in that game.
There was in the third one.
What, some gray area?
Where the story would actually accommodate the gray area instead of, like, making you do one horrible thing, then one awesome thing, and then one horrible thing. Yeah. You kind of just be like, you know what?
Which is also the other thing. Being a renegade doesn't mean you do terrible things. Renegades should not represent... Being a renegade means you do terrible things, but... But that's not what being a renegade is.
No, I mean,
being a renegade is just not following orders.
They did kind of make it where, like, some bad choices were worse than other bad choices as far as, like, what they got to choose in one scenario.
Yeah.
I remember,
you were mostly choosing between two terrible things in the third one.
Exactly. I remember in the past, Mark, you said, like, being a renegade really just meant you were being a dick.
Yeah, that's what it is. But in real life, being a renegade means that you don't follow the orders or the system. So that would have been a lot different.
In part three, if you were a dick, you start to look like the Terminator. Like, your face turns all red.
Right.
It's not a problem with the visual change. I just didn't like the fact that the morality, and you Dan's heard me say this a million times, the morality in video games should not be you're either a good guy or a bad guy. That's ridiculous.
Which, again, is why you like Alpha Protocol. You
know how many times I've tried to play Knights of the Old Republic, kind of like that? Like what the hell's his name? The old man in one. Jolie Bindle, the black ball guy. He's just like, you know, I don't care about light or dark. He's just like, just consider me like another companion with force powers and lightsaber.
Which I think is, to be fair, the Jedi's light side and the, you know, Sith's dark side thing is directly a binary opposition. So you had to look at what is good or bad. Mass Effect had this golden opportunity to take the exact same thing that Star Wars already set up for them, right? Same people. And instead of taking advantage of the one difference they could have from Star Wars, which is that you don't have defined good guys and bad guys in that series.
Right. You're exactly right. Like, the Sith and Jedi dynamic is set up to be polar opposites, where with, like, what you're saying with Mass Effect, you should have been able to play with that gray area, because this is a...
But
like,
if you choose a gray area, you're missing out on
a bunch of good stuff. There was a bunch of huge things that you could do.
Decisions that you could make later on.
Was it the was it the third one or the second one? Like, kicking the guy out the window was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Right? But if you only want to, if you want to be a Paragon, you're not going to choose that option.
They don't even give you that option later in the game, especially in 3. If you were in the middle, you got no red and no blue options. Yeah. And most of the time, those were the things that actually really affected the game.
Yeah.
So basically what they're saying is, if you don't do extremist tactics, well, then you're not going to really win this game the way you want. Yeah. It's bullcrap.
Which doesn't have to save every single person's life.
Exactly. Right.
Which doesn't work.
You're not a bad person for not trying to save everybody.
In a universal conflict like Mass Effect is, like, there should be a whole lot of gray area.
Yeah,
like,
and I do, one thing I really wish they would have done this, and I kind of hate ripping on this angle of it, but I have to say this. I would have preferred if in the end, the elusive man would have came out to be a good guy in his own right. And you would have had to choose between his version of the right thing and the other, the Republic, or whatever they're called, the people who live in the Citadel, whatever.
Yeah,
the
last time. How many times did you beat that game?
I think twice.
Once.
And how long ago was that, when it first came out?
Yeah.
Okay, do you know how many endings there are now?
No, how many?
It's like 3 or 4.
You know how much the game is?
You get to actually talk to the...
To the elusive man?
No, the fucking, the catalyst.
The boy?
Yeah, he's like but he's like transparent, or translucent. Yeah, he's like all crazy looking, and he... Basically, I mean, it's hard to explain. I don't really want to spoil it for anybody, but I mean, there's like 3 or 4 different endings now.
I always intended to just go back and watch it on YouTube.
And plus, all the DLC, the story DLC they put on there, because so much of the DLC was for multiplayer, which I got all that because most of it was free.
Yeah.
You know, it was cool.
Right.
Because, I mean, at the end, like, in the multiplayer now, you can choose from, like, what, like 100 different specified people. In the beginning, it was like 7.
Yeah.
Was it really?
Or 21, whatever, but what the hell was I getting at? The storyline DLC was actually pretty cool. They had something called Leviathan.
Okay.
And they actually show the organic creatures that the Reapers base their design on. And there's like a few of them left on like a far-off planet.
Okay.
And they're not very cool at first, you know, like, they're fucking big things. And then there's one where you can play as like a female Turian. And like, there's all kinds of them. And I got a couple of them, but I don't have them all because I had something to do.
Yeah, I mean, I played it and I enjoyed it to a point, and then I was just disappointed and put it down. But I should go back and replay it with the DLC.
I'm going to play them all again.
Or I should just play even the first one.
No. That's why. Do you know what Genesis is for the second one?
No.
And if they give you a 15-minute interactive comic.
Oh yeah.
Make all the choices. You know, there's a couple that you can't
for the PS3, right?
All of them.
So let me get this out of the way. I am no way, or this show is in no way, affected positively or negatively by whether or not you have a Gamefly subscription. But for sale right now, Mass Effect 3 is $16.19 on Gamefly. It feels like, to me, if you haven't played this game yet, if you're one of the...
You should now, because it's insanely, awesomely low.
It's so cheap, and it's going to last you a good month, and when you're disappointed in the ending, the good news is now, I guess, there's 19,000 endings. So
get 2 and 3, you know, spend the money you want to spend, and depending on how much fun you want to have with the game, and you're going to have a lot of fun with the game.
Yeah, I do wonder, as a person that tried to play it for the Wii U, and really just couldn't get into the control scheme... the Wii U version is worth getting. It's special edition, which it doesn't really mean all that much nowadays. It's also still just $16, but I tried to play it for that, and it just didn't. Something about it just didn't grab me. Yep. You got a new weapon and a new mission and a new squad member, which is all fine and good.
Okay.
But the control scheme is just so...
In one of the DLCs, there was like a few new squad members that you could use. I think you could actually use... Arya, that chick from Omega.
Oh, okay.
Now, were the Carrie Ann Moss?
And did this? And did the squad members actually offer anything, or were they like, what was his name, Saeed?
I don't know. I never got to. Like I said, I literally did have something to do right before that came out.
Yeah.
And yeah. When I came back, I just wasn't. My Xbox was already broken. I still got the hard drive.
Yeah.
Thank God. And Brian Muller's holding all my games for me.
That's good. Well, we're down to the last minute, so. I'm going to say that I think that it's one of those games that I might try to revisit soon, maybe after I beat The Walking Dead, okay. Which is a phenomenal game, for the record.
What episode are you on? I still have the last one. Maybe I'll play that.
I think I'm on the second to last one. I think I'm going to try to beat it this weekend
second
myself.
Second to last one is a good,
that's the good one. Episode. We just got the tanker out of the way for the train.
Do you know the names of these episodes? Do they have names? Or is this the last one, the second to last one?
Yeah. Well, it's the one with the train, is what I'll say.
that's episode three. It's episode called three, the one with the train.
Yeah, episode four is called the one after the one with the train.
Yes. Which, and I'm on the one after the one after the one with the train.
One with the train.
And then the second list.
All right, guys. This is Chicago Gamers United, a Duck Gamer podcast, signing out.